following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pulse Gamecast. We are at episode DECA. This is the big 1-0. Today's record date is January 21st. It is 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Graydoll, back in the saddle.
And I'm Jason. I guess back in the saddle with you, but that doesn't sound quite right, does it?
Yeah, not really. But we're back and ready to go. Let's just say thank God for frozen peas. So let's go. moving on to our intro, Jay. Let's start with you. What's been keeping you busy this past week?
Oh man, other than the comedy, MechWarrior Online. I've been playing a lot of MechWarrior Online. Don't ask me why. It's been out for a while. I've always been a BattleTech fan, but for some reason, somebody I knew, I think, said, you know, you sound like you miss MechWarrior Online. You should play that. So I did. I ended up getting purchasing an Orion, the Protector limited edition, and really enjoy it. It's a good stand-up mech, busting people in the face, not constantly running out of ammo, but you gotta watch your heat sinks. Other than that, I've been playing some Space Hulk. Another friend of mine bought me that. I liked it a lot. And finally, wrapping up with some Warhammer 40k Dawn of War, the original, gone retro, making it my own badges and banners. And I played a little bit of Dawn of War 2 as well. But I think we discussed earlier, there's no one in any of the online, is there?
No, not at all.
THQ with TU, and we got nobody to play with. Breaks my heart. If they would just, okay, THQ, listen to us, or whoever owns the license now. We want your source code for your servers. Give it to us now.
I've got a question, actually, about MechWarrior Online, because I played a little bit, honestly, like maybe an hour of that as well this week. But I've never bought a mech. So what's roughly the conversion? Because you have to have in-game currency, the C-bills, but you also have to buy the MC, which is what, MechWarrior Cash or whatever?
Yeah, that's the mech cash. It's mech cash. Basically, yeah. So basically, microtransaction, and you can either purchase it directly in game. They have PayPal. Have you ever heard of Ultimate Gaming Card?
I don't think I have.
If you play World of Tanks, you might be familiar with it.
Oh, okay.
You can buy it at Walmart, and they don't make them rechargeable, I don't think, but they do make them with an account, or you can just buy them straight out. And it's a third party, buy $15, buy $20, buy $50 worth. But you can redeem it on MechWarrior Online, and that way your wife's like, oh, you bought something at Walmart. Oh, yeah, we needed some stuff from Walmart. But no, that's seriously, you have to have the mech bills, and also you have to have the C bills. So basically, you can't just log in, buy a mech. You actually have to play and work some, it's like experience, basically.
And what, how much was the card, and how much MC did you get?
The particular mech that I wanted, they have them sort of, you can buy heavy mechs cheaply for like 1400 MC, but they're not really popular. They know what's popular, obviously, and then they release limited edition with special paint jobs or in configurations that are exceptionally desirable, such as particle projection cannons, which don't have reloads,
right,
and have a really, really long range. And yeah, exactly. So basically, I started off, my first purchase was a heavy mech. I'm a House Davion fanatic, so I went with the Orion, which is, it's not a House Davion only, but it's seen a lot of service with them. And the 75 tons, I believe, is what it's at, so it's a nice round number, and could take some hits on the battlefield without just falling straight out. I did pretty well with it. First couple of showings, I played for about a night and a half before we had a long weekend. But the point being is, get the money together. It cost me roughly, I think it was $29.95 for 6,000 C-bills, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was $4,500 for the mech.
Gotcha.
So it was about, what, $15, $17, I guess?
Yeah. Well, that's not bad. Because, you know, you and I have talked off air, of course. I'm a huge Catapult fan. That's my mech of choice. You know, the C1 config is okay. That's the classic LRM, or the C1, what is it, C1B or whatever with medium lasers. But I like the K2, yep, which is two PPCs. And the mechs you get to start with are just okay, but I really wanted to buy one, and I just haven't. But I was just wondering what the conversion was on MC versus real cash and whatever.
It's a lot of fun. I'm sure we'll see you out there. We have a way of falling into each other's game patterns. So.
Right. Yeah, let's see. So for me, I actually have been replaying StarCraft II, The Heart of the Swarm, the campaign mode. I do not, absolutely do not get into the multiplayer at all. People watch too many Korean competitions and then just want to copy that. And it's just no fun to play when you're Terran, and then all of a sudden 5,000 Zerglings just come literally Zerging you, and it's just not fun to play that. So I've been playing the campaign. I am a big StarCraft fan. I love resource management, RTSs, so that's all about StarCraft. Also, like Jason, I've been playing a little bit of Warhammer 40K, but I've been playing the Space Marine game that came out, just the campaign mode, because THQ is out of business, so there is no one line. Of course, it's the Ultramarines, blah, no Blood Angels, but, you know, you take what you can get, I guess. And I've also jumped back into Guild Wars 2 just a few days ago. I started an Asuran Thief, and she was okay. She was pretty fun. I mean, I like the Asurans. The Thief was okay. Maybe I'm just not in that mindset, but she just... And obviously, the Thief in Guild Wars 2 is very, very much a support class, but I just want to beat face. So tonight, I just created a warrior, so I will be jumping back into Guild Wars 2 for the warrior, the fighter, and just smashing heads left and right. So that's nice. What I've been up to. Yeah. Let's move on to news. I'll go ahead and lead us off. As I've said on previous episodes, I am a huge Mass Effect fan. I am currently replaying Mass Effect 2 with a Sentinel. I said this on, I think, episode 8, maybe 7. Love it. Can't get enough of it. So I found on Kotaku. I don't know why I always mess that up. A fan has written a 400-page script to, as he calls it, fix Mass Effect 3. And those of you that have played know exactly what I'm talking about. It's actually, I don't know. See for yourself. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's on Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D. I'm a little leery. I don't know why about downloading the PDF to read, so I'm just reading it on the website. I'm not saying it's a phishing site or anything, but when I go to a website and it has trailers for games called like League of Angels with obvious, highly breast physics models just taking off their shorts and bikini bottoms, I tend not to download anything from that site. Just call me old-fashioned. But yeah, it's 400 pages. It's got concept art. It's got script. It's got plot hooks and devices. Give it a shot. See what you think. Let's see, Jason, you have some information on Hearthstone for us.
Oh, yeah. I was digging around today. Naturally, I've been waiting on Hearthstone to go open beta. And sure enough, today they fired off an opening salvo against a Chinese beta ripoff across the seas. Now, they have, WoW has a Chinese-based sister company called, what is it called? NetEase. And they're supposed to kind of lock down people overseas, you know, from copyright infringement. Well, as close to copyright infringement as the Chinese will allow, considering they're flying B-2 bombers.
Right.
But that being said, on the same day that Hearthstone decided to go open beta, they drop a big $1.65 million lawsuit in China against these people who just have a beta game called The Crouching Dragon. And I basically, I think it's a, you know, crouching IP and hidden, you know, profits is what it is. But I was really impressed that it's finally gone open beta. So I plan on downloading it this afternoon and this evening, I guess, and playing. And are you currently playing?
You know, honestly, I haven't played in a while. It's honestly been since before Christmas. But it is fun. It is fun. I do recommend it, especially open beta. I know they plan to release it, obviously PC, and I believe Android and iOS. So
yeah, it was the iOS that got ripped, by the way. That's the one that they really got nailed on. So, and I could see how that would be a big problem considering the propagation. Did I say that right? Promulgation? Yeah, promulgation. The promulgation of the game through the iOS market will probably be a lot. It'll permeate a lot faster than people buying PC versions of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, once you jump in, you'll see. I was telling Jason a little pre-show. You know, if you've ever played Magic the Gathering, it's essentially, well, you know, most card games are the same. You just play your cards out, spells, attacks, defenses, monsters, whatnot. But it's very, I'm not going to say dumbed down, not at all, but I will say simplified kind of version of Magic, but with obvious WoW flair. And once you check it out, it lends itself to a tablet format. I can't wait to pick it up for my iPad. This is the perfect game. You're sitting on the couch, you know, watching TV, play a hand, or, you know, you're at work, or, you know, whatever, you ride the bus to work or subway or whatever. It's a great time killer. And of course, it's more than just, you know, MOBA type stuff, but it you do accumulate rewards that carry over and everything. But I highly recommend it, especially with it being open beta.
Cool. Now, wait a second. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You said you got some stuff here, but I noticed in our show notes now something about Star Citizen. Please tell me this is true.
Yeah. Star Citizen is almost to the $37 million mark.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what level of stretch goal this is. It has to be the 15th or 20th, I guess. But as a matter of fact, about 5 minutes ago, I was looking at the page, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. They're at like 36,910,000, so they're almost there. And last night when I checked it, it was 36,900,000. So, I mean, it leaps and bounds. Leaps and bounds.
Oh my God. This has got to be the putting diamonds in the swimming pool stretch goal.
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, well, I haven't been following this super, super close, but exactly. I mean, what else can they do? I mean, obviously, they've got more stretch goals to go and continue to meet, but I would think by now they would almost have done everything they could think of, short of, I don't even know. I don't even know what else they could do, but yeah, check out the page. There are a ton of they have all their goals listed, of course. You can check it out there, but 37 million and climbing. It's on its way.
Oh, and did you see that the opening banners with everything that they're showing? They're actually showing you concept ships right there that have been built that are going to make it into the game. Dogfighting updates. But what struck me was the new Star Citizen organization system is now live.
I didn't read up on that. What exactly is that?
They're making is that there's you got me all muffled here. You can register your organizations, the clan system.
Oh, okay, your guilds. I gotcha.
Yes.
And so you can already reserve your name and everything.
Yeah, you can access, it says right here, you can access the organization hub via the community menu at the top page, and then they start talking about your group and registering your organization, having live chats, organizational rules, and how they're going to play up in the future. And I was like, oh my God, you're already registering guilds. The game hasn't even gone alpha yet.
Well, you know, I think SWTOR did that.
I
think that's the trend now, but that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
But where SWTOR backfired, let me just throw that in here, because this is one of the few things I've ever seen BioWare trip over their own appendages about, is they went ahead and let us do that and register our guilds to servers prior to the servers being declared if they were going to be PvP, PvE, or neither.
Right.
So we were registered to servers in guilds, and then they announced decks post facto. And I was like, what? Wait a second. And because we were on a PvP server with our guild, I was like, oh, man, nuh-uh. So,
but they did allow you to change.
They did, but we had lazy, good-for-nothing guild leaders. Anyway. But anyway, that's not... No, it was their fault, not our fault.
Yeah, right. That's a personal problem.
Oh, pain.
Alrighty, another game that Jay told us about a couple shows ago, the Repopulation, has, I think, now 4 days to go on Kickstarter and is already 216% funded.
That's right. Another one I can't wait for.
I was listening, and honestly, I can't remember now, maybe massively, their podcast, and they were talking about this game as well. And those guys were really excited about it. And exactly as it says right on the front page, I mean, they just referenced Star Wars Galaxies and the sandboxness of it and the exploration and everything like that.
I'm sorry, that was all I had to say.
So, Repopulation Sandbox, SWG fans, it's on its way. It's coming. Let's see. Jay, why don't you tell us about your Steam Machine?
Oh, yeah. News. Well, everybody who was watching CES 2014, I'm sure, had their, you know, whistles wetted extremely with the Steam Box. You know, obviously, if you haven't heard about the Steam Box by now, go back to issue. I believe we started mentioning it in episode 3.
Yeah.
We've pretty much mentioned it every episode since, or at least every other one. I like to keep everybody busy. Steam, you can't not like games on Steam, and you have to know what it is. But now that they've got their own OS and they're sticking it to any machine that can handle it, with a whole flair towards put it on your big screen TV in your living room, you have to just get ready for it. I mean, you have to. Whether you're going to buy it or not, you have to understand how it's going to affect the market. That being said, everybody's releasing boxes that are supposed to be geared towards this Steam experience. Well, they're not all the same, and I want to make sure all of our listeners know that. Even if it's got a big name attached to it, you might be needing to check into the company's idea of what a Steam Box is supposed to be. In Alienware's case, I believe we got a link here on GameSpot. What we're looking for here is machines that, if you like to tinker with, don't buy Alienware's. They've said outright that they plan on having an iPad-style, what's the word we're looking for, a generational turnaround. Once a year, they expect you to buy a new box, a new Steam Box host, because of the generational gaps between, the generational jumps in graphics, in performance, in requirements. Now, most gaming systems you look for, like the PS4 and the Xbox One, they're looking at 7 years, 6 years minimum, 7 years probably. With these Steam Boxes, Alienware already said our Steam Box is going to be good for about a year. We will let you change the processor, maybe the memory, but if you want to, you know, dig around in there and tinker with the video card or whatever, buy one of our X51s. This is something our consumers are really going to need to take a look at, really need to compare with. Just because it's a Steam Box doesn't mean all Steam Boxes are the same. So in preparation, we're trying to give you something here that you may or may not hear in any other, you know, podcast or any other show. Pay attention. Pay attention to what they're expecting you to buy and the lifespan that they're expecting to put on it. Don't plop down. You know, I'm guessing these things are going to run between $2,250, somewhere running on there. That's a guess now, and I don't have any hard numbers yet. But from what I'm hearing, online, between $250, you might plop down $300 for this. But they're expecting you to spend that every year. So just keep your eyes open, compare them, get a general idea of what's going on before you start, you know, pre-orders, because that's coming really soon.
You know, Jay and I were talking about this pre-show. And I've said in previous episodes, I am not a fan of the Steam Machine just because I'm such an avid PC gamer. I have an okay rig, and I don't feel the Steam Machine is for me or something I need to invest in. And this, every year, that definitely, no thank you. Absolutely not. So that just definitely seals the deal for me. I will not be checking out Steam Machine, any box, any of them at all.
That's you're going to have a lot of people that are going to say that. But what I've noticed, you know, I don't know if it's just me and you, we're older gamers. We don't mind tearing stuff down. But there's a lot of people out there who are going to have this attached to their big screen TV in their living room. We're not talking about, you know, PCs here. We're talking about this is the big screen experience where it says click this button and it expands to full size and it's basically run by a joystick. Because they actually have a Steam Stick. That's and if you haven't seen these, you should go check them out. It's finger D-pads. So they're expecting this to be part of your entertainment center, not your PC rig. And that being said, these people have these, and I hate throwing this out here as a generalization, but if you've noticed, as the price of LED and plasma have fallen, then people are just going ahead and cycling through these TVs. And that being said, if this is part of the entertainment system, now they're going ahead and cycling through the games boxes as well. At least that's what they're aiming for. We're going to see if it sticks. But I'm with you. I really don't have that kind of money to toss. I got three kids. But if I was a college student and I had the disposable income come Christmas time, my birthday, whatever, or someone, you know, just has it, sure, why not?
One quick little thing that I forgot to put in the show notes, because honestly I wasn't 100% sure. You know, Jay and I are SWTOR fans, even though neither one of us really played the past week. The new Rack Ghoul event is apparently live. It may even have gone live today with the most recent patch. Ooh. If you've been following any of the tweets and or any of the little in-game things, it is a new event. It's not the one that's happened in the past. It's not on, where was it, Tatooine, I think.
Yeah, the old Rat Girl Crisis.
Right. This one is on Alderaan. It's a new little zone, new event, new quest. I honestly am assuming that it's for in-game 50 level plus toons, just like the previous ones, but like I said, I forgot to put that in the show notes just as a heads up. That did go live, I believe, today.
I'm glad they're doing something with all that space on Alderaan. What a waste.
Yeah, you know, Alderaan is okay, but, you know, Tatooine is just... I hate Tatooine just because it's so freaking big. And you know, I haven't made it to endgame SWTOR, and, you know, people say, oh, you hate Tatooine, wait till you get the Hoth. Because they say it's just so much bigger and just white. So, good times.
Good times.
Alrighty, let's move on to, I believe, our last little bit of news. Jay, you have another game update for us.
Yeah, something you don't hear that often. For those of you who have ever dug around in some of the tweets for our development studios, you know, obviously, you know, Rooster Teeth and people like that play on Halo, and then different tweet grabs. But I was digging around and I found something here on, I want to say I pulled this off of N4G, but don't quote me on that. But there's a company out there called Crazy Viking Studios. They're producing a game called Odin, I believe is the name of it. And this was interesting tweet at the top, I believe. And here, let me go ahead and say it right. It's idea. Crazy Viking Studios at Volgar gave us a nice welcome today. No promises about Volgar. XB1 is powerful, but it might not handle the awesome that is Odin. So then Volgar jumps in and says, but can you promise that Volgar on PlayStation, right? And Crazy Viking Studios outright, yeah, actually I can. If only Sony would finish my darn paperwork I sent them 3 months ago. I think they're starting to think they lost it. But that being said, with all of the double ups and that everyone's talking about nowadays, you know, if you buy Xbox, you get this. If you buy Sony, you get that. But technically, there's no difference. We've actually got some developers out there who are flat out stating PS4 has the oomph that Xbox One doesn't. So that being said, this coming tightly on the heels of Xbox One stating that they had gone through 75 revs of their, you know, 75 iterations of the Xbox One before they hit the one that was right. That it's a game breaking and you know, life moving, and the mountains will shake and the, you know, oceans will rumble. But flat out, we've got developers telling us when they've got access to both boxes, and this isn't the only one. This is just one that I'm going to go ahead and quote at the moment, that the PS4 has the horsepower the Xbox One doesn't. So that being said, I'm thinking that what we're going to see is a lot more of the exclusive games that lean towards the pure eye candy are going to go towards PS4. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm expecting. That's my what do you call it? Your whenever you make a prediction. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my prediction is you're going to see eye candy coming out of Japan. To where you're going to see first-person action games that are trying to play off of, don't worry about the frame rates, we got that handled, coming out of the Xbox game. So we'll see how that plays out.
I don't even know, because that's something, you know, I just don't go that far into the tech. Is the PlayStation, do you know, does it have a beefier processor or than the Xbox One? Do you know? Or is it just the code works better with their...
Well, we've known from the day that Sony concentrates on getting a proprietary system in place. I mean, Sony, first of all, had four processors before anyone had quad processors. Before anyone was releasing quad processors, the PS3 had four of them. And in fact, there was a big deal about how we could hook them all together, make a farm out of them, and then search for extraterrestrial
right,
life,
yeah.
You know? So that being said, that's Sony's mindset. Sony's mindset is we want the hardware, we'll make the hardware, and everyone can catch up to us. Xbox and Microsoft in general says, what do we have that's the most modern that fits a price point? And that being said, they also know that it's all about getting the exclusive games and then getting the rights. The Windows option to them, because most Xbox games are generally playable on the computer as well, and that can't truly be said for all the games on Sony. There are a lot, but it can't truly be said for all the games that are on Sony. And that being said, you have two different camps. You have the eye candy camp and the camp that may have tons and tons of pretty, but the action boils down to, and they... Xbox One has to have something for it. They've from day one said we're going to get with DICE Studios. We're going to get with we're going to make sure that it's not exclusive for people like Treyarch and things like that. They'll do whatever it takes to make sure that they have the action games locked down. To where your sweeping sagas and things like that generally come from the PS camp. And okay. Those are eye candy happy. So there you go. If that helps in the explanation, hopefully that did it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Thank you. Alrighty, guys, that's just about going to wrap us up for this week. We were scouring far and wide for geeky stuff and just couldn't really find anything. I guess we're too new into the year. You know, people aren't releasing or even working on stuff, I suppose. Maybe in the next week or so we'll find some good tabletop board game, card game, something related news.
Like wooden dice is the best I could come up with.
Well, like, you know, I actually follow a manufacturer on Twitter. Oh man, what are they called? Artisan Dice or something like that?
Uh-huh.
Is that who you found?
I believe that's it, actually. The Carving Craft also, there was Artisan and Carving Craft were the two that did it. And the Carving Craft was doing a Kickstarter campaign and Artisan was reviewing some of their older stuff and somebody was comparing the two. So there you go.
Now the Artisan, I've looked at their dice. That's about all I can afford to do.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, people, oh, wooden dice, what? No, these are like, massively rare and exotic woods.
Yep.
I mean, I haven't even heard of 99% of them. When they show the wood, I'm like, what in the world is that? I mean, you know, they're woods I saw that were purple with whorls of black, and they come from some... like 10 square mile stretch of the Amazon, and that's the only place in the world this wood grows. That's how
I know.
Yeah, that's how rare and exotic, you know, this stuff is. So you can imagine the price.
Yeah, the exotic dice, by the way, just, now I'm not saying anything, but as you know, I can't let it go without a Kickstarter. Exotic Dice by Carving Craft is a Kickstarter. They're currently at $1,117 with a pledge of 1,000 gold. So they've already increased it, you know, by 10%. They have 23 days left. It's 46 backers. But like you said, we're talking about exotic dice. Purple Heart, Bolivian Rosewood, Simple, Honduran Rosewood. And when we get to 5,000, just so I can throw that out there, Black and White Ebony, Jabillo, Red Heartwood and Zebrawood. Now, Zebrawood, I know for a fact that has to be imported from. Is that No, that's not New Zealand. Where is that? I'll have to look it up. I thought it was New Zealand, but I could be wrong. But $5,000, they want $5,000 before they'll even produce dice. And we're not talking about small dice here, just so that they know. You can get 16 millimeter, but the ones that they're talking about are 25 millimeter dice, about an inch. So,
right.
Oh my God, the cost.
Oh yeah, and now Artisan Dice, I saw, they primarily do six-siders. I'm assuming that they'll also do, you know, polyhedrals as we know them, gaming dice, 20s, 10s, 8s. But that stuff is not cheap. Not cheap.
Yes, sir.
Just a weird little story. one time, I don't know why they did it, but they made a dice out of ox horn.
Whoa.
Yeah. It looked beautiful once it was finished, of course, and polished, but they said the cutting, the grinding, the laser etching, it smelled like, what did they describe it? Like like wow. a poop-covered corpse, I think is what they described it as.
So for those of you who are going into the gaming industry, it's not all funs and giggles like you think it is.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's cool to check their site out because, they have, of course, lathes and whatever, but they have a lot of laser etching equipment because that's how the numbers are usually cut into the dice. They're laser etched and... those machines break down not fairly often, but more often than you might think. And one time they posted one of the costs, and I think it was like $5,000 or $6,000 to have the thing repaired. So,
wow.
Yeah, neat stuff, but there you go. But as I said, we're a little light on the geeky stuff, but such is life. Well, yep. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. You can follow Jason and I on our various social medias and gaming tracking services or whatever. You can find me on the PlayStation Network and Steam and Raptor under Teletech 77062.
And you can find me under Raptor and under Steam, Jason, JaySynn.
Be sure to check out some of our sister podcasts we have here at HollowSweetMedia.com dealing with gaming, especially with the Hearthstone beta now being open. There is a worthy opponent. Even once you jump into the beta and play a couple rounds, you'll see where the name comes from. But you can check them out. We also have Beyond the Veil, a podcast dealing with the secret world, and we have Tribbles and XTC dealing with, of course, Star Trek Online. And they just hit their 101st episode, and the 100th episode is actually up. Whoever it is.
Congratulations.
Yeah. They've been going for a while. You know, that lazy guy that does the editing for that show hasn't got the 101st one done yet, so.
Loser.
You know, that loser. But anyways, thanks a lot for tuning in, guys, and have a good one. We'll see you in game.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check HollowSweetMedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at The Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to ThePulseGamecast@gmail.com.